So we're beginning Masechta Bava Metzia.
Table good for you?
Yeah, it's good. We're beginning Masechta Bava Metzia. So we talked about yesterday where the major topics of the Masechta, there's a lot of different varied topics. It's much more varied in that sense than Bava Kamma. The Meiri summarizes it and says it's basically all about arguments, all about tainus between people that are not related to Nezikin. So Nezikin we discussed in Bava Kamma. This is going to be various other kinds of claims and counterclaims between people that don't have specifically to do with Nezikin, and also that don't have to do with Karka. Most of the things that have to do with land and real estate or whatever are going to be in Bava Bastra. So the first two prakim over here are going to be dealing with the first parak and most of the second parak are going to be dealing with the halachas of lost and found objects. The Mishnah starts off, Shnaim Oichsin B'Talis. You have two people holding on to a talis, each one claiming that they own it. And Rashi points out, Dafka, we're talking about that both of them are holding it. Let's say, for example, only one of them was holding it, then you'd say, Hamoitzim Mechaber El Araya. But because both of them are holding on to it equally, then you don't really have, neither one of them has any greater proof that he has it than the other. Tosfos, by the way, discusses a few different permutations with that. There are other Gemaras that talk about other cases where you have something where the ownership of it is doubtful. You have cases where neither of them is holding on to it. For example, a case of a boat where we say called the Alam Gvar. You have a case that we're going to have a case later on in a few blat about a case where two people are holding on to a shtar. There are several different permutations about what exactly the din will be in various cases. In this case, you have two things. They're both holding on to it, and since, as we're going to say, that each one claims I found it, or each one claims I bought it, as we'll learn in the Gemara, both of them could actually be telling the truth, conceivably. They could have both picked it up at the same time. They could have both given money to the merchant, and he agreed to sell it to both of them. Or let's say, I don't know, the Rashba talks about, for example, it doesn't have to be that he agreed to sell it to both of them. He agreed to sell it to whichever one gives him money first, and now we're not sure which one gave them first, let's say. Each one thinks that he gave it first.
Both can't be pulling it by the string?
By the string? No, if they're holding on by the strings, that's something else. We're going to talk later on if one of them is holding on to only the strings of it. No, here we're talking about holding on to the actual talus.
So they have to go to Bezdin holding?
So they have to go on to Bezdin and hold in the talus. Yeah, literally, they walk into Bezdin like that, yeah.
So take a picture.
Yeah, okay. Zema animatosia, zema animatosia. This one says I found it, and that one says I found it. Zema kula shali, zema kula shali. The one says it's all mine, and the other one says it's all mine. As the Gemara will point out, that it seems to be repetitious. Why bother mentioning both? So therefore, zei shava shein lebapachas mechetzia. The one person should swear that he owns not less than half of it. Why we use that lashon, we'll learn tomorrow in the Gemara. Why dafka that lashon? The other one also swears that he owns not less than half of it. And then they divide it. Dividing, the Gemara is going to discuss later on Zayin Dachet, doesn't mean literally dividing it as if we cut it in half, or does it just mean, maybe it could, conceivably, if it's talus, for example, you could conceivably cut it in half and there's still a usable piece for each person. For example, the Gemara says that you could use it, let's say, for a child. A talus doesn't have to mean like a talus that we wear in shul. It means a garment, you know, So it could conceivably be cut in half, and you still have a useful piece. Or yachloiku can mean that you sell it and divide the money. So we'll deal with that, and we'll deal with that next week in the Gemara when we get to it. Next, zei makula shali v'zei mechetzah shali. How about a case? One of them says that I own all of it, and the other one says I own half of it. So he agrees that the other guy owns half of it. They're only arguing about the one half.
He doesn't say they're holding it, right?
But it would have to be the same thing. I mean, if they're not holding it, if the one guy is holding on to it and the other one is not, then how much mechabel abadai is not to talk about.
In this case, it could be,
for example, let's say that one of the Rosh talks about, for example, could be, let's say, when they picked it up to begin with. Let's say, yeah, they both picked it up at the same time. One of them was holding on to more of the garment than the other one. So therefore, each one maybe is muchzik in what he's holding.
He couldn't be that from the previous case.
No, because Adaraba, as a matter of fact, actually, well, so wait, well, how do we split it up? Well, how much does each person get? One person says the whole thing.
50-50 is 3/4 and 1/4.
So that is 3/4 and 1/4. But one thing is, actually, the Nimukka Yosef points out one thing. First of all, Tosfos begins with the question that, well, you know, let's first learn what the Mishnah says, then we'll talk about Tosfos' question and what the Nimukka Yosef says. There's that point, too. Right, yeah, there's a couple of nuances in here that we have to consider. So first of all, okay, so that Haim Akulashali, the one who says it all belongs to me, Yeshava Shainava Pachas Mishlai Shachalakim, he should swear that I own not less than 3/4 of it. Vaimachet Yeshali Yeshava Shainava Pachas Mirvia, the one who says I own half of it should swear that I actually own not less than 1/4. Wait, there's a lot of Chiddushim in it. Just let's finish the sentence and then we'll talk. Then, Zen Noto Shlesha Chalakim, Zen Noto Revia, then the one gets 3/4 and the one gets 1/4. Okay, so there's a lot of nuances in this. First of all, a number of the Rishonim asked, and the Mukha Yosef brings it, and a bunch of other Rishonim bring, if we're saying that one is moda to the other on half the garment, why does the one who's claiming the whole thing, why does he have to swear on 3/4 of it? Let him swear that I own 1/4 of it. I own 1/4 of it. You're swearing at least 1/4. You're swearing that you owe at least 1/4, that you own at least 1/4. A half you already moda to me anyway, and I'll end up taking 3/4. Why am I swearing on 3/4? And they... Yeah. See, you wouldn't have thought of that. Yeah. And the answer is because what happens when the guy is taking a shavua? Now, it's true. When a person takes a shavua in Beis Din, we don't allow him, we learned this briefly, I think, in Ksubos or in Kedushin or something, we'll learn it in more detail when we get to the Sefer Shavuot, that when a person is made to swear in Beis Din, we tell them you're not doing it on your own das, you're doing it on das Beis Din. You're doing it based on our understanding of what you're saying. Nevertheless, we want to clarify it as much as possible. What would happen if this guy, when he's swearing that I own, the one who's claiming the whole thing, if he were to swear I own at least 1/4 of it, he might mentally be thinking, you know which quarter I'm swearing on? That quarter is within the half that he's married to me anyway. So in other words, secretly in his mind, he's thinking, I know I really only own half. Won't I be swearing falsely if I'm claiming that I own 1/4? No, because not 1/4. Aside from the half, it's not 1/4 meaning the half of the half that we're arguing about, but rather 1/4 as in the half, part of the half that he's murdered to me anyway. In order to avoid him playing tricks like that, we make him swear on 3/4. So then it's absolutely clear that he won't swear. The whole point of the swearing, as Gemara is going to say, as we'll learn tomorrow, is that in case he's, as usual with swearing, in case he, we're going to learn, it's a takana of the Chachamim, in case what he's saying is not true, he'll withdraw. So like this, by telling him 3/4, by making him say 3/4, you're making absolutely clear that he's really claiming the entire thing, and he's swearing 3/4 as in the half that the other guy has murdered to me, plus the quarter that I'm claiming from him, not that the quarter is included in that.
You could do it differently.
You do do al das based, and nevertheless, that's what Nimukka Yosef says, you still want to clarify the Lashon as much as possible.
So if you want to clarify as much as possible, then you should tell him which part you claim, and show it to the Beis Din, and the Beis Din should tell you swear on that part.
Because you're not swearing, you're not pointing to a specific part.
No,
you're,
but
you're,
that's
you're,
your point.
No, instead of pointing to a specific part, again, because not necessarily, again, especially if we talk about that you don't necessarily, that you may sell the thing and split the money, then it doesn't really matter
what specific part.
Yeah.
Part. Do you say 3/4, so you mean
yeah.
Three quarters can mean any 3/4.
It can mean any 3/4, it's fine. Any 3/4, that's fine. It doesn't matter which 3/4. The point is, no, it doesn't. It means the half that he's murdered to me plus another 1/4.
Well, then you have to make it specific.
By saying 3/4, that's specific enough. That's the point.
Yeah.
Okay, now Tosfos brings up that's how it is. I don't understand. It doesn't really matter.
3/4 can mean these 3/4.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. Ultimately, he's claiming the whole thing. No, it doesn't matter because we don't want him to be saying.
I swear about another part of the 3/4.
Listen, he's claiming that he owns the whole thing anyway.
Right.
We make him swear. In the second part also, one is claiming that he owns the whole thing.
Right.
We make him swear that he owns not less than 3/4. For our purposes, it doesn't matter which 3/4. The point is, he's saying 3/4, that by by definition, that's going to include the half that the other guy is murdered to him, plus another quarter. It doesn't really matter what part of the garment we take it from. The point is that he can't get away with swearing, I own at least a quarter of it, and have in mind that that quarter is something which we wouldn't have had to make him swear for anyway because the other guy is murdered to him.
Well, the half that's murdered, I agree.
Okay.
But so the half that we not murdered could be either half.
But that's the point. That's the point. In other words, either half. One half is going to go to, of that half is going to go to one. One half is going to go to the other. Therefore, at that point, once he says to be quarters, then we're good. It doesn't matter whether it's a half from here and a quarter from here, whether it's a half here and an adjacent quarter. Either way, it's it. Tosfos brings up another point, which is another point that you wouldn't have thought of, which is a chiddush in the Mishnah. Why don't we believe the second guy who said now turn into the second guy who claims I only own a half of it? Doesn't he have a migri? He could have said I own the whole thing. Why don't we believe him then? I could have said that I own the whole thing. Instead, I'm saying only a half. You should believe me and give me the entire half. So a few different
quotes. Yeah, so you cannot have a migui if the other guy claims.
But that's not the point. The point is he has a migui, and then okay. So Tosfos
migui would be okay.
Tosfos gives a few answers. One of them maybe is similar to what you're saying. We don't say migui lahoitzi. We say a migui in order that a person should be able to keep what he currently has possession of, not to be able to take away money from somebody else. A migui is not strong enough for that. Mm-hmm. Here, what you're doing, he only is holding on to one quarter of the talus. You want to use the migri to say that he should be entitled and claiming that he's holding on, let's say even to half, but whatever. The point is the other guy's claiming the whole thing. To say that you give him the whole half would be taking it away from the other guy. That you can't do with a migri.
Right.
That's one answer. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Another answer. Another answer. Tosfos says is that Another answer that a number of Rishonim give, it's also brought in the Mukhar Yosef, is a person would rather, if he were to claim a half, and because of a migri we give him the whole half, that's not a migri. A migri is he made a weaker claim and he could have made a stronger claim. Like this, a person would prefer to be able to claim the whole thing and be able to claim the half and be able to get the half, to be able to get all 100% of what he's claiming, which is 50% of the beged. We don't assume a person is going to have the ha'ozah to do such a thing.
Right.
So therefore, it's not really a migri. He wouldn't have been in a position to do that. They talk about
he could have claimed the whole.
He could have claimed the whole thing, but we don't say that because he's claiming a half, therefore we should give him a half. Then that becomes a stronger claim. In other words, that you're claiming 100% that you're going to get 100% of what you claim. That becomes a stronger argument. A person that's the point. In other words, if a person has a choice between making a claim on the whole thing and only getting 50% of it, or making a claim on 50% and getting 100% of that 50%, he'd rather do that. That's not a migri then. So the migri is he could have made a different claim. Here he's better off with the original claim that he made. Yeah. They talk about also an interesting thing, and the Rebbe brings it in the Rishima and Shnai Mersin, which we'll talk about soon, that the Tesefta gives yet another case. What if the person only claims that he owns one third of it? So then the din is he swears that he owns not less than 1/6, and he gets 1/6. And the other guy gets 5/6. The Gemara later on talks about the concept that there's a certain chiddush to the fact that the Mishnah mentions the case where he says a half rather than a tosefta as a third, in that when he says I own a half, he could be sort of similar to what the Nemuka Yosef says, but in a different vein. He could be trying to be smart about it. He knows if he claims the whole thing, they're going to make him swear, and he's only going to get half. So he'll claim, I own only half of it, and therefore we figure in that case they'll give me the whole thing, they'll give me the entire half without a shavua. So to avoid that, we make him swear as well, to avoid him making such a tricky claim like that. Now in the case... 100%
of 50%,
right.
It
is better than 50% of 100%, yeah.
Right.
Now in the case when he claims, in the case when he claims a third, then you don't have that issue of your rumi mirum. You're not going to say that he's playing a trick, because if he was going to play a trick, he would have claimed a half. So in a certain sense, there's a little bit of a bigger chiddush in the case of the third. However, though, the Rebbe goes on to point out over there in the nigla part of that Rishima, that on the nigla level, our Mishnah prefers to give us the case of the half rather than the case of the third, because we want to mention this idea of Yerume Koma'arim, that even though we think he might be playing a trick over here and claiming only half in order to get the whole thing, in order to get the entire half, even though we might think that way, nevertheless, we're still going to make him swear and he'll end up with a quarter. That's a bigger chiddush than mentioning the concept that when he claims a third, that he ends up with only 1/6, that we don't say, as Tosfos says, Migu
Lahoyti. It's about the same. It's two different. 50% and get these 100% of 50%.
No, because with 50%, there's the added factor, there's the factor of Yerumi Koma'arim, the idea that he might be claiming 50, knowing basically to fast the Merubah like to fast it. If I claim any more than 50%, they're going to make me swear on it. Mashenkin, when he claims 1/3, he's not at that point yet. He could have just as well claimed 50%. There's no Yerumi Koma'arim. And the Mishnah preferred to tell us that, that even in that case, you make him swear. So now we may as well pause over here in the Mishnah and then tell over a little bit of what the Rebbe talks about in that Rishima, of the deeper idea behind Shteimos and the Talis. The deeper idea of it, actually, the basis of the idea goes all the way back to the Baal Shem Tov. You can find it in Keser Shem Tov, you can find it in a number of Maimorim of the Friedrich Rebbe, and in various other places in Chassidus. The Talis over here, Beruchnius, represents the reward for a mitzvah. A mitzvah, we know, you have Torah is mozon for this food for the neshama. Mitzvahs are clothes for the neshama, and specifically you have the schar of the mitzvahs. The fact that, as we learned way back in Sota, that the mitzvahs have a power of protecting a person against the klippers in the world. That's the talus that we're talking about over here. So what happens? So the various places it talks about in Siddur is basically they have two people arguing over the schar of the mitzvah, which one is entitled to it, which then becomes the question. I mean, what are you fighting over the schar of a mitzvah for anyway? You're not supposed to do a mitzvah for the sake of the schar. So where the Friedrich Rebbe talks about it, he explains that they're not arguing about the schar isn't like a chatzoniastic thing, but rather about the connection that it brings you to the Eidishter, which is the pnimius of the mitzvah, schar mitzvah mitzvah. That's a worthy thing to fight for.
Is it?
Yes,
not
necessarily with another person, but the point is to argue that I'm entitled to have that connection with the Eidishter that's brought by the mitzvah. Yes, again, as it comes down in our physical world, it ends up that there are two people fighting about it and based in as the adversaries, but it doesn't have to be that way. You're not doing it in an adversarial way, but rather in a complementary way. Anyway, the Rebbe goes on in Mr. Shima to explain in much greater detail. And what you're talking about over here is you have one person who convinced another one, gave him toichacha, let's say, to do a certain mitzvah. Now, that person who did it, well, either one of them actually, can be a tzaddik, a beinoni, or a rasha. If they're a tzaddik, then that's the first case where each... So let's start with, a mitzvah is something that just comes to you like without even preparing for it. Like it just, you all of a sudden, you see something, you find it. You pick it up completely unexpectedly. So that represents the kind of thought of doing a mitzvah, the thought of tshuva that a person sometimes has, like a person one day hears, their neshama hears the bach called Yotzes Mehav Chorev that says, you know, people need to be learning Torah and doing mitzvah, and he gets nesor from it. The mitzvotia, he says, like, I found it all, it just dropped into my lap, kind of. Or, zeh makula shali v'zeh makula shali, which as the Gemara is going to say later, is talking about where each one's claiming that I bought it. Where there you're talking about that each one's saying that I worked hard, I put an effort into this mitzvah. So what happens? You can have a few different cases. They can both be tzaddikim, where therefore each one is claiming kulashali, my entire mitzvah went into this mitzvah, and therefore the 100% of the protection and connection with the Eivish that this mitzvah produces should be mine. Again, in Ruchnius, it's not a zero-sum game, right? Each person can have kulashali without it impinging on the other one. In Gashmius, it comes out that it's a zero-sum game. What one person gains, the other one's going to lose. But, you know, we're talking in that vote. Where it can be complementary. So what happens? So each one is claiming, on the level of a tzaddik, and not necessarily a tzaddik as in like a tzaddik of Tanya who doesn't have a Yetzirah at all, a tzaddik relative to this mitzvah. Each person has certain mitzvahs where they're a natural tzaddik in, certain mitzvahs where they're a natural beinoni in, and certain mitzvahs where they're a natural rasha in, you know, where it comes really hard to them to do it. So if this is a mitzvah where a person is a natural, where each one is a natural tzaddik, let's say, so each one claims, so the one who gave the toichacha, for example, claims, kula shali, it's all mine. I'm the one who got you to do it, therefore the whole schar for the mitzvah goes to me. And the other one says, but I did it, and therefore kula shali. So what happens when they can swear? Swearing accomplishes like this. The Gemara tells us in Shavuos that before Beis Din would make a person swear, they give him a whole long speech explaining him the severity of a shvua. The whole world shook when the Eibishter said, "Lo yisita Hashem Hashem lo tehalash av," etc. So a shvua is something that's meant to bring out a person's yiras shemayim, and it's also therefore it brings out a person's deepest koyches. That's the famous thing in Tanya, Mashbiyanoisa, that also Mashbiyanoisa, a person is filled up with the powers of Ruchnias that he's going to need in life. Again, in Ruchnias it's not a zero sum thing. I can have the whole schus and you can, but each one is arguing the whole schus belongs to me. Doesn't mean that you can't have the schus as well, but my contribution was the more important one. Mine, I'm the one entitled to the primary schar of it. Anyway, so what do? We make them each swear to bring out this deeper Yiras Shemayim, this deeper aspect of their pnimius, and then if each one is able to swear, meaning in other words, so the one who gave the toichacha is able to swear, meaning in other words, that expresses the idea that his toichacha was sincere. It was dvorim ayotzim min alev, which then are nechnasim al alev. The one who did the mitzvah is also able to swear, indicating that the mitzvah was really something that went into his pnimius, not something that just was a chitzoniistic, a temporary thing. Then fine, v'yachloiku, then they each get their portion of it because then they each have a valid equal claim to it. What happens, the next case, what happens if one of them is a beinoni? So now he's not claiming the whole thing anymore. But he says, half of me, my nefesh elikis, is entitled because, okay, my nefesh bahamut had nothing to do with it. It's still wild inside me or whatever, but my nefesh elikis got me to do it. And again, the other one is claiming, yeah, but my toichacha got you to do it. So then, similar idea, each one swears, indicating that what they did was with mitan emes, and then the one gets three quarters, meaning he gets credit for the fact that the other guy's nefesh abahamis was overcome, as well as the fact that half the fact that his nefesh alakis was overcome is due to him. And the other guy gets half of the half, meaning half of the nefesh alakis, therefore a quarter. Yeah. Then the Rebbe goes on to say, so what about the Tosefta mentions the case of a third? The Tosefta wants to tell us also about what happens if the guy is a Rasha. Again, not a total Rasha, but a Rasha in the sense that he does, his Yetzirah doesn't really have any power over him in connection with this mitzvah. Here you have to talk about those three factors. You have the Nefesh HaLekis, the Nefesh HaBahamis, and the Guf. Because the Guf is not here. The Guf is not serving as a tool of the Nefesh HaLekis anymore. It's sort of functioning independently. So then you can talk about that the guy who did the mitzvah claims, fine, my nefesh elikis had nothing to do with it, my nefesh bahamas had nothing to do with it, but at least my guf, you know, aroused itself with my pintel yid and did it. Therefore, I'm entitled to a third. And the other guy says, yeah, but it wouldn't have happened without me. And then again, you know, so he winds up with a half of a third, a half of the schar that comes inside the body doing it. So he said, the Rebbe says, why did the Mishnah mention it? Because the Mishnah didn't want to have to talk about Rishoyim. And in the times of the Mishnah, they were still on a higher level. They weren't, yeah, in the times of the Tosefta, but he's the next generation, they were starting to deteriorate, and the case of the Rasha was more common.
What about if they were Shukrim? The same thing would apply.
What about if they were Shukrim? What? Did they
said they own both the Tzaddis and Shukrim.
Okay.
In a business.
So fine, then, in that case. Then, no, but in that case, they own it to begin with. In that case, do they? I mean, they
and then one claims it's seed, and the other one claims it's seed.
What happened? Do you have any evidence that it was actually that you sold it? Here we're talking about neither one has a chazak on it to begin with. Right. So it's different when they have a chazak on it. Let's go on with the Mishnah. If you have two people riding on an animal, or one was riding the animal and the other one was leading it. Again, each one claims that I own the whole animal, whereas we will learn in the Gemara later on, and we'll talk about that leading an animal can be a kinyan, mishicha, and riding it to a certain extent can be a kinyan as well, yeah. Each one again swears that I own not less than half of it, and then again they divide it. Again, does it mean dividing it as literally shechting it, or does it mean dividing it as selling it? Later on in the Gemara.
Now this is obviously something that's wandering around. It's heftive.
Yeah, I mean, the Talos also has to be. The Talos also has to be found in a
grocery book in some way. You have to call it out for it before you...
Obviously, in the case of the Talos also. So we're talking about, a case where there's no simon or it was found in a city that's mostly goyim, etc. Yeah. Bizman shem moidim, continues the Mishnah, when they're both moida, Oishiyeshlem Edim, or they have Edim. Now, on the face of it, that it sounds like it means that they agreed to each other, that we both picked it up together, let's say, or each one has Edim, Chok and Bleshur, then they divide it without a Shvur. That doesn't sound like much of a Chiddush, though. The Gemara is going to talk about later on the Chiddush in this last part, and then in this last sentence of the Mishnah. More thoughts of. Why does the Mishnah have to be so wordy about it? This one says I found it, that one says I found it. This one says it's all mine, that one says it's all mine. Listen, Chadek should just say one sentence.
Both,
the answer is Chadek Katani. The Mishnah means one thing. Zerim ani mitzasiya v'kula shali. The one says I found it and it's all mine. V'zerim ani mitzasiya v'kula shali. And the other one says I found it and therefore it's all mine. So it's not two separate claims. It's two halves of one claim. Each one is claiming that I found it, and therefore it's all mine.
But you could have said both said they found it, and both claim it's all there.
Well, that's the point. That is what the mission is saying. So far, what the Gemara is explaining is that it's sort of like as if one says ani mitzasiya, and before he even has a chance to continue, the other guy interjects and says, no, ani mitzasiya. Then the guy continues, kula shali, and the guy jumps in, no, kula shali. Hey, the question is, well, listen, ani mitzasiya, fine, the mission doesn't have to say kula shali. It can just say that the one guy claims ani mitzasiya, but now you're dying to kula shali. If he says, I found it, automatically, it means it's all his. Why does the mission need to mention that part of his claim? The answer is, itana ani mitzasiya, hava mina mai mitzasiya ri'isiha. Because if it only said ani mitzasiya, you might think that mitzasiya, I found it, means I saw it first. Meaning, even if it didn't actually come into his hands yet, you would think, if you only had the word anima sasiya in the Mishnah, you would think maybe just seeing it is enough to be koine. Tana kula shali. Therefore, the Mishnah
continues. We need mashicha.
We don't know that yet. Wait. Tana kula shali. Therefore, the Mishnah continues. Therefore, the Mishnah continues. Therefore, the Mishnah continues kolashali, implying the bereiya loikani, that there has to be something that mitzasiya means more than seeing it. It has to be, yes, that he made some kind of valid kinyan on it. Doesn't necessarily have to be mashicha. It could be kinyan out of Abba Amos. We'll learn later on.
Know,
or whatever.
We
don't know necessarily. Tosfos points out, okay, it's true. We have a Mishnah later on in our perek that says that you can't be koina something with seeing. However, in those Mishnayos, you could say where you deliberately said, I'm going to do some other kind of kinyan. For example, you saw a mitzia, the case in the next Mishnah. You saw a lost object and you told the other guy, give it to me. And then he picked it up and claimed it for himself. He's koina it. Fine. The very fact that you told him, give it to me. In other words, I don't intend to acquire it until I lift it up. Maybe then that's why Re'iya is not enough. If it weren't for that, maybe Re'iya is enough. If it's not for that, maybe you would... What do you mean? We learned there's many different kinds of Kenyan. Maybe seeing is, and maybe seeing something where you saw it first is a valid Kenyan. But no, by saying Kula Shali, we're excluding that.
That's the case. That Hamshacha has to be a
Kenyan. Mashicha is when you're buying something. We're talking about getting something from Hefka. We're talking about a lost object. Therefore, Tana Kola Shali, the Bir'iya Laikani. Therefore, the Mishnah continues with the words with Kola Shali, implying that you cannot be Koine with just seeing it. In connection with the Rishima Shneimos and Metalis, in terms of it Bavoda, that ever explains the significance of this fact that you can't just see it, you actually have to pick it up, is if we're saying that finding it implies that it kind of fell into your lap. You felt that this odorous milamila to start doing tshuva and start doing this mitzvah. It's not enough that you just saw it, like, seeing something has a very powerful effect on you, but it's very transient. You see something and the next day you forget about it. No, that's not good enough. It has to actually, if you want to be able to claim the talus of the mitzvah, hello, you have to actually be that you grabbed it in your hand, that it has permanence.
Let me ask you a question. If you're saying that Riya could be a way of kinyan, then how would...
It can't be. That's what the Mishnah is telling us. Okay.
But the question that we're asking is, maybe it could be, if that's the case, someone could have come before the one this guy saw it and claimed the same thing.
But he's not there right now. We can only go with anything. You could always say somebody else.
Someone else didn't see it before.
Fine. No proof. If the guy's not there, there's nothing to talk about. I mean, But anyway. Okay. His question is, how can you possibly think that the word could potentially mean seeing it? We learned at the end of Avakama, in connection with the sugya of an aveda of a goy, we said over there, how do we know that even after you picked it up, you don't know if it's a goy thing, you don't have to return it, unless it's an issue of Kiddush Hashem or Chilul Hashem. We said, Rabbanoi said, when the pasuk says, and you find it, it means that it came into your hand. And nevertheless, it's only achicha, it's only aveda's achicha that you have to return, not a goy. So therefore, automatically, you know from that, mitzosiyah means I picked it up. The answer is yes. Ain or mitzvah to crawl that story liyod imashma. Sure, in the pasuk, mitzvah means you picked it up. Umiu tana lishna dalman nakat, but the tana might be using the language of common people. Umidachazile aman no ashkechet. It's like in English, you say, you know, as soon as you see something, I found it. Once he sees it, aman no ashkechet. He says, I found it. So even if it didn't come into his hand, you would think that maybe because of that, maybe seeing is enough to be koineh. Therefore, the Mishnah specifically says, Kolashali, implying that I actually made a kinyan on it, he will not actually be cutting it just by seeing. Tosfos points out that would be if he did a mice cutting. If he did some small mice along with that, then he can be cutting something. So just Tosfos says he makes a little fence around it, let's say.
Covers it up with something?
Covers, yeah, I guess. Next, to listen to Kula Shali V'lai Bo Yani Mitzasiyah. Fine. If you're going to say that you need the words Kula Shali so we don't misunderstand what Mitzasiyah means, just say Kula Shali. Don't say Ani Mitzasiyah yet. Just say Kula Shali. It's all mine. V'lai Bo Yani Mitzasiyah. You don't need to say I found it. The answer is Yitana Kula Shali. Have Amin Ba'alma Dukatani Mitzasiyah B'ri'ya Ba'alma Kani. Yes, but if it only said Kula Shali here, fine. You wouldn't make a mistake in our Mishnah. But in any other case where a person does say I found it, you would think that finding that seeing it is enough to be considered that you found it. Therefore, Tana ani mitzasiyah v'hadat Tana kol shali. Therefore, the Mishnah uses both expressions. The Mishnah yaseira hashmein and deriya lekani. The extra wording in the Mishnah is meant to teach us once and for all that reiya is not koyin. However, for me matzis amret chadakatani. How can you say that these two things are all one long claim? Ani mitzasiyah v'kol shali. Ani mitzasiyah v'kol shali. But the Mishnah says this one says and that one says. It sounds like it's two distinct claims. Why the repetition? Amar Papa, the Tamer of Shimi Ba'ashi, so the Papa says, or some say of Shimi Ba'ashi says, Ba'amrila Kedi, or some say Kedi. There's one place in Gittin where Rashi explains that Kedi is the name of a Chacham, the name of one of the Amaroyim. And in most other Mefarshim, and Mashal has a long discussion about it, say that Kedi means like blank. It means some say Rav Papa said it, some say Rav Shimi Ba'ashi said it, and others say an anonymous Amora said it. We don't know which one. Anyway, Reisha b'Mitzia b'Sefer b'Mekach HaMemper. We're actually talking about two different cases in the Mishnah. First, Zer Ma'ani Mitzia is talking about where they found something. And Zer Ma'kulo Shali v'Zer Ma'kulo Shali is not talking about a found object. It's talking where they both are arguing who bought it. And in fact, we would need both those cases. The Itana Mitzia, because if the Mishnah had only told us the case where each one claims that he found it, Avamina, then you would think, Mitzia hu d'ramu rabbanon shavu ale, you would say, look, in the case of a Mitzia, the rabbanon are going to force you to swear on it, mishum d'mori v'omar, because otherwise, without the shavua, the person will be murder heter la'atma, he'll come up with an excuse, a heter for himself to be able to keep it. Why? He'll say to himself, look, it's a mitzia. If I take it away from him, he's not losing anything. He didn't invest any money in it. It fell into his lap. So fine. I'll go be toifus it, even if it's not legitimately mine. So even let's say he picked it up all by himself. If you don't make him swear, he'll think to himself, you know what? What do I got to lose? I'll go grab onto half of it. Then I'll have a taina that I own the half or the whole thing or whatever. That's for like my day, and I'll split it with him. But when it comes to buying and selling, you can't say that. If he knows the other guy paid for it, then he there's no way for him to be murder heter for himself to take it for himself. Now Rashi points out the Gemara is going to say in a few lines that the case of Mekach HaMemker is both of them gave money to the merchant. So on the face of it, then, the guy is not necessarily going to be out. It's not like you're stealing from him, per se. In the end, what's going to happen is each one is going to get half of the object and half of the money that he paid for it. If it ends up, like in the first case of the Mishnah, where each one claims that I bought the whole thing. Nevertheless, though, it's still considered a loss for the other guy because he wouldn't have bought it if he didn't need it. So therefore, the guy can't be motor hetcher for himself. You know what? So fine, he won't get the thing after all. He'll get back all his money because he'll realize to himself, I can't do that. The guy went and bothered to schlep to the store to buy it because he needs it. So
the owner of the store admits that he.
Wait a few lines. We'll see what the owner of the store is saying. Tosfos points out a little bit differently that the vote is you can't make him swear in that case, in the case of Mecha Chomemko. Again, if it didn't say Mecha Chomemko in the Mishnah, you would think maybe you can't make him swear because he thinks he's telling the truth. The whole point of the Shavua is if he knows that what he's saying is a lie, he's not going to swear falsely. But in the case of Mecha Chomemko, he'll think he's swearing truthfully. I did give the guy money after all. Each one gave 100% of the money. Each one is going to get back 50% of the money and 50% of the object. So, Avol Mecha Chomemko Lekel Meimachi, Mecha Chomemko, you can't say like that, Eimaloi. Maybe you should not say that they should have to swear. Maybe you should be able to take his half without swearing. The Tana Mecha Chomemko, and conversely, if the Tana only mentioned the case of buying and selling, then you would say, Hu Diromu Rabbanon Shvuale. Fakir, you would say, by Mecha Chomemko, there's more of a reason that the Rabbanon would make him swear, Mishum the Mori Ba'oma, because he can come up with a different excuse for himself. Tavroi Domi Koyohi Vana Domi Koyohivna. Look, after all, each of us did give money to the merchant. So look, now at this point, I happen to need the thing more. I'll take it for myself. And as far as him, fine, he can go and schlep to the store and buy another one. By Messiah, you can't say it like that. It's a one-time thing. If you take it from him, he's not gonna find another one. So you would think maybe he won't use such an excuse for himself to try and take it, saying that the guy has an opportunity to get another one. And therefore, maybe you shouldn't make him swear. Tzricha, therefore, you need in both cases to teach us that nevertheless, in both cases, we don't worry about what excuses he may or may not use to himself. Either way, we make him swear.
That's why we have to have the full, complete two sentences.
That's why we have to have the full sentences. Zer mani matasiyo, then yeah. In terms of the Rishima, the Rebbe explains these last couple of lines that again with the metzia, the person thinks to himself, okay, it's a metzia, it's a one time thing. You know, I had that all of a sudden, I had that hysteria, so all of a sudden the other guy didn't. Therefore I get more credit for it. Whereas with Mecha Chomemko, he may argue I put more effort into it. The other guy, fine, Litrach, he didn't work hard enough by Voida. I worked hard in this avodah, therefore I should be more entitled to it. Now, interesting thing, by the way, it's a little odd to juxtapose something we're talking from the Rebbe with something that we're talking from a character named Menashe from Ilya, a fellow in the times of Vilna Gaon, an interesting character. He was a shtickle maskil and not quite a misnagged neither on the side of misnagdim nor on the side of the siddim. Basically, he thought both sides are wrong. Essentially, anyway,
he was an independent. Party.
He was sort of yeah. Tiferet Yisrael brings a vote from him saying that maybe he said he wants to explain the wording of the Mishnah differently than the Gemara. It's not zeh ma'ani mitasiyah, zeh ma'ani mitasiyah, zeh makul shli, zeh makul shli are two different cases. It's rather zeh ma'ani mitasiyah, zeh ma'ani mitasiyah is sort of like a headline. The case is two people are holding on to a talus, each one claiming that they found it. Now, within that, you can have a case. Each one claims I own the whole thing, and you can have where one claims I own the whole thing and the other claims I own only half of it. If you look at it that way, there's no Mecha Chomemko in it. So he wanted to learn the wording of the Mishnah differently than the way the Gemara does. Is that Oiskehalten? Good question. Anyway, onward. Okay, the question is Mecha Chomemko. What do you mean when it comes to Mecha Chomemko that we're not sure? We're not sure. They're both arguing, and we have to respect both. We have to make them both swear on their claims. Velechti zulzi miman nokat. Let's see who the storekeeper got money from. Which one paid him? The answer is loy tzricha de nokat mitavayu. Yes, but the case is that he actually got money from both of them. Mechad migaiti or mechad bar kochli. One he took it from willingly, and the other one against his will, meaning the merchant only planned to sell to one of them, but the other one kind of forced the money on him. So he ended up accepting. So v'loya dina miyu midaita miyu ba kochei. We don't know which one was midaita and which one was ba kochei. So Hidaito is the one who gave it to him, that he agreed to sell it to him. And the other one is Baal Kochai. So Rashi makes a distinction over here, by the way. We learned in Kiddushin that the storekeeper has a certain nemonos to say who he sold to, but there it's talking about, first of all, there's two different issues. One is if he actually still has the goods in his hand, because once he already sold the goods, where here we're talking about he already sold the talus to one or the other of them, you don't expect him to remember which one he sold it to. And also, in this case, since both of them gave him money, you can't expect him to remember which one gave it to him, Midaita, and which one Baal Kochai. Whereas if only one of them had given him money, there'd be more reason to argue that he ought to remember.
Usually, a guy who's forceful, you look at the guy like, oh, you
maybe.
You look at him, you know, guy was nice.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know.
The merchant still holds.
So no, the merchant is not holding the thing. That's the thing.
No, the money.
The money, yeah. He said, yeah, well, it doesn't matter at this point whether he has the money or whether he spent it yet. Tosfos explains differently that we don't that first of all there's a different girsa over here. We have the girsa lo yadayna. We don't know which one was vadaita, which one is Baal Kochai. Meaning the storekeeper himself knew at the time, but now we don't know because he himself has forgotten. The other possibility, the other girsa is lo yada. He himself didn't. Tosfos says lo yada. He himself doesn't know. He never knew to begin with which one was David Temidaita, which one Baal Kochai. If he knew, he would at least have the status of one aid, and that would help. So that would help one side or the other.
Twins.
Yeah. Tosfos anyway learns different to the re, and Tosfos explains yet another possibility. The lefty zuzim iman naka is we should ask them themselves which one of you paid for it. Fine, we can say that each one is murder heter for himself. That if only one of them paid, each one is murder heter for himself. But they're not going to blatantly lie. We can assume that they're not. The swearing we're going to learn tomorrow. We're going to learn tomorrow as a special takana of the Rabbanon. L'chatchila, if only one of them paid, why don't we ask them, which one of you paid? We shouldn't be choshed at them that they're going to be lying when he didn't actually. There's no way he'd be murder heter for himself. There's no way he'd come up with any excuse or with any rationalization to be able to do that. Ask him, and whichever one says I paid. So therefore, the answer is both of them paid. And the answer is both of them paid, and they're arguing which one the merchant agreed to sell it to.
You can ask the merchant who paid first.
That's another one. But what if he doesn't remember? Again, he doesn't. Fine. One last thing on this Midaita and Baal Kochai in the Rishima over there that Rebbe explained that this last bit is you're arguing which one gets the schus of the mitzvah. Well, see which one did it with a real Abba of the Eibishter. And the answer is both of them did. Let's say the one gave the Tosafot with real Abba of the Eibishter. The other one did the mitzvah with real Abba. But the question is within Abba of the Eibishter itself, within Abba Hashem, there's two kinds. There's, so to speak, the natural kind that the devil was discussing in Tanya a couple of days ago, Abba B'tanogim. And then there's the kind that involves subjugating your Yetzer Hara. One's Midaita, one's Baal Kochai. You can't be sure which one is which, and therefore there can be the argument who's the one more entitled to the schar, to the protection of the mitzvah. Should we say now that we established that our Mishnah is talking about two different cases, one where both of them are claiming they found the talus, and one where both of them are claiming they bought the talus, and we're saying either way we're saying that they both have to swear to the truth of their claims, and then they divide the talus accordingly. Should we say then that our Mishnah does not go according to the opinion of Ben Nanas? The Ben Nanas, because if it goes according to Ben Nanas, you have a case. The Mishnah in Shavuos tells us a case as follows. A balabos has hired workers. Instead of paying them directly in cash, he tells them, I have an account at a local store. You guys go whenever you want and buy stuff at that store and put it on my account. The storekeeper will write it down. Eventually, I'll pay him for everything that you guys bought. Time passes. The storekeeper comes up with his account books and says, I have written down that I gave your workers X amount. And the workers say, we never received that amount.
Oh,
so you have two contradictory claims. What happens, the Mishnah says, we make the storekeeper swear that his account books are correct, that he really did give out X amount to these poylim. We make the workers swear that they didn't receive X amount. And we make the balabas pay again. We make the balabas pay. Now, Benana says over there, Ha'amai, he says, Kei tzedei lebei 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 shavuos shav. What are you talking about? How can, yeah, that's the point. How do you have it? Somebody is going to come to a Shavuot Shav. Now, in our Mishnah, on the face of it, that's the question. How can you make it that you're going to have two people swear where one of them is going to end up being lying? Is one of them is going to end up lying? Actually, there's an interesting vote from the Kotzker that in a certain sense, even the one who's telling the truth, it's going to be a shvuah shav, it's going to be a useless shvuah, because the point of the shvuah is to find out the fact. If both of them end up swearing, then there was no point in the shvuah anyway. The shvuah didn't really accomplish anything. In that sense, it was sort of a shvuah shav, it was an unnecessary shvuah in retrospect. Anyway, so Banana says that in that case, what they actually do is they each get their money without a shvur. The Chenveni gets his money from the Balabas without having to swear, and the Poilim get their money from the Balabas also without having to swear.
They just swear they didn't steal it.
They didn't. They don't swear. That's the point, according to Banana, because otherwise, if they swear, one of them is going to be lying. Now in our Mishnah, why are we saying that each one of them should swear? L'chura, one of them is going to end up being is going to end up as a false shvur. Wait, that's the answer. Filu teva ben nanas, hasam vada ika shvuah shav. Sure, but over there, there's definitely a shvuah shav. One side or the other is not telling the truth. Either the chenveni did not give out this merchandise, or the poilim did not receive it. Either the chenveni did give out the merchandise to these poilim, or he didn't, or the poilim received it, or they didn't.
Could it be that they gave some amount of the money, but not all?
Then it would be modi mikta. That's different. We're talking about where to be. Here it's not necessarily a shvuah shav. In the case of buying, yeah, both of them gave the money. But even in the case of matziah, both of them might have picked it up at the same time. So therefore, there's not necessarily a shvuah shav or shvuah sheker involved. Both of them might actually be.
Who both picked up what?
Both people picked up the talus at the same time. The talus is lying on the floor. They both see it at the same time. They both pick it up together. Fine. Now each one has an equal claim on it.
That's why you could swear. But
so even Benanis might agree that in this case, both of them can swear.
Love Dafka, Zama, and the lie, because it's still a third party. It's still the actual employer. Because the employer could have made a deal with the store to say they gave it and they didn't give it.
The Balabas admits that he made such a deal with the store. There's no question that he made such a deal. The only question is, did the store pay it out or not?
But in our case,
both of them could be true. Okay. Next, should we say that our Mishnah...
So Bananas would agree with our Mishnah.
Okay, Lema Masnissin Deloika Sumchus. Should we now say, let's try another possibility, that maybe our Mishnah is not like Sumchus. The Ika Sumchus HaOmar, we learned in Baba Kama that Sumchus says, Momon Amota B'Safek, Chok and B'Loi Shvur. When you have money where there's a Safek on who owns it, we have the case over there, for example, where a Shur gores a Parah, and afterwards you find the Parah's dead baby by the side, and you're not sure whether it gored the Parah before the baby was born, in which case the owner of the Shur is Chayev for the death of the baby as well, or whether it gave birth before the goring, and it had a stillbirth or whatever, and then the owner of the Shur is Potter on it. Sumchus said, Momon Amota B'Safek Chok and B'Loi Shvur, that they divide it without a Shvur, and our mission is saying you have to swear. Okay, the Gemara asks back, the Elamai Rabbanon, so what are you going to think, that our mission is according to the Rabbanon who disagree with Sumchus? Fine, but they don't say you swear either. They just say that whichever one is going to take it away from the other one has to bring a Raya, with Edim, not just a Shvur. Our mission is saying a Shvur is enough. Over there, the Rabbanon say you'd need Edim. Okay, the Gemara answers that. Hi, Mai. What kind of a rebuttal is that? How do you think that that's a valid objection to the question? If you're going to say that our Mishnah goes according to the Rabbanon, we could understand very well that it fits with what they say over there. Hasam by Tafsi Chavayu, because in that case, neither of them is Toifus, neither of them has the. Has the dead baby animal or the money or whatever in the dead baby animal in their possession right now because it's out there in the field or whatever. So in that case, that only one of them is Tophis. The owner of the one who owns the money, the owner of the shur, has the money in his possession. So he, in order to take that money away from him, he's Tophis in it. To take it away from him, Amir Rabbanan Amoitz Mechavel Avadaya. But over here, both of them are holding on to the talus, and neither one is more muchzik than the other one. Then fine, the Rabbanan would say you can't do a moitzi mechaver of a raya, otherwise neither one is more moitzi mechaver than the other. So fine, then you do a shvur. Eli amat sumchos. But if you're going to say that our Mishnah is like sumchos, so there's no question. Fine, the Mishnah can go according to the Rabbanan. They say they're a moitzi mechaver of a raya. That's because one of them is muchzik and one not. Here, both of them are muchzik. Yeah, and Tosfos points out, I mean, if the animal was in the barn, let's say that each one is muchzik in their respective thing. The one has his dead animal, the other one is muchzik in his money. But even if it was out in the field, he still has a chazaka that he owns the dead animal. The other one has a chazaka that he owns his money. So therefore, each one of them is muchzik. The one who has the money, which is what we're talking about, the money to be paid out, is muchzik in it. Whereas over here, each one has an equal chazaka in the talis. Eli, I'm a sumchos, but if you wanted to try to say that our Mishnah is like sumchos, you can't. Hashta, because now consider, madach over there, that both of them are not tofus in it, only one, because again, the owner of the shur is the one who has the money in his possession, which potentially should have to be used to pay for this dead animal. And even there, Sumchot says you divide without a Shavua. Here, where both of them have an equal tfisa on the talis, like Koshikin, how much more so that Sumchot should say you don't need a Shavua? So it doesn't seem that our Mishnah can be made to fit with Sumchot's opinion.
Sumchot
would say that they don't have to swear.
It goes back like Ben Nanas.
Well, for a different reason, but yeah, it would come out like what we thought, that Ben Nanas might say that you do it without a shvur. Yeah. The answer is no. Afilu tema sumchos. No, because you could actually say that our Mishnah still fits with Sumchot's opinion. I'm a sumchos shema v'shema, because sumchos is talking about a case over there where both of them are making a tiny sopik. Neither one knows for sure. Neither one was present when the shur gored the parah. So neither one knows more than the other whether the parah gave birth before or after the goring. Bari loyomar. Here, two cases of bari. Each one claims, I for sure own the entire garment. Or half at least, in the second case of the Mishnah. Yeah. Each one is making a definite claim. I definitely picked it up before you did, or I definitely paid the merchant. I definitely paid the merchant with his consent or whatever. Yeah. So in a case of body or body, maybe Sumchot would agree that it's not just good enough to divide it without a shavua. If they're making shema claims, you can't make a person swear on a shema claim. What is he supposed to do? Swear that the animal gave birth before the goring. I don't know for sure whether it did. I can't be taking a chance that I'm going to make a shavua shav. But a body, he could. So therefore, some question would make him swear. Okay. Question is, well, the Rav bar Rav Huna almost some plus I feel the body your body. What about the we discussed in the Gemara over there that Rav bar Rav Huna understands Sumchus to be saying that Ian Bavakama, that even in a case of body your body, Sumchus would also say that you divide it without a shavua. Then according to him, what are you going to say? How could you make our Mishnah fit according to Sumchus? The answer is no. I feel the tame of Sumchus. Even then, you could still say that our Mishnah fits with Sumchus. Because Sumchus is talking about a case where there is drur de mamoina. What is drur de mamoina? Rashi says it means chisora in mamon. It means that one of them is going to be losing money that he had up until this point. Meaning, in the case of the cow and the dead baby, if the cow had given birth before the goring, and you're going to make the owner of the shur pay for the dead baby, he's losing something that he shouldn't have had to. He shouldn't have had to pay for it, and you're making him pay for it. Vice versa, if you don't make him pay for it, and it turns out that it miscarried because of the goring, then the owner of the parah is losing out. That's drur de mamon.
Either way, one is
losing out something that he previously had. As opposed to over here, when we're talking about a metzia. When we're talking about a Messiah, easy come, easy go. He didn't have it beforehand. He's not losing something that he had previously. Right. So Dorada Rashi explains means a loss. Tosfos explains differently. Dorada de Mamona means that there's two different kinds of stopping. One is where the stopping only comes about because of their tainus, like over here, they come into Beis Din holding a talis, each one claiming it's mine. Versus, there's another case where there's sort of speak, an objective suffix. Even if nobody ever came to Beis Din with claims, we ourselves would have a suffix. What were the actual facts? Did this part of give birth before or after the goring? So Tosfos explains that Gerard de Mamona means that. So Dvara de Mamona means that there's an uncertainty, there's an inherent uncertainty about who that Mammon belongs to. Over here, there's not really an inherent uncertainty. This uncertainty only comes about because of their respective titles.
Because we're not sure
when the growing happened, right, relative to the giving birth, right. So, he almost sumchot teicha deka Dvara de Mamona. So Sumchus might say in that case was the Dvara de Mamona a loss of money according to Rashi, or an objective, an inherent suffix according to Tosfos. Then you would say you divide it without a shavua because you have no choice. Aval heicha the leka Dvara de Mamona, but in this case there's no Dvara de Mamona because they never had it in the first place, or according to Tosfos because the suffix is not an inherent one. The suffix only comes because of their own tainus. Right, so maybe he would say not. Make him swear.
In other words, he would only
say that he would, according to Rabbi Bar Akuna, only if there's Dvara de Mamona would you say that you can't make them swear, because that you don't make them swear.
And Dvara de Mamona in that case
would be according to Rashi that one or the other of them is going to lose something that they previously own, or so therefore you can't say because one guy is swearing therefore you should make the other guy lose money, or according to Tosfos because you have an inherent suffix and therefore there's nothing to swear about. Whereas over here the suffix only comes over here. Neither one is losing something they previously had. It's Matsya anyway. It's something that dropped into his lap. And according to Tosfos, there's no inherent suffix over here. The whole suffix is coming because of their respective claims themselves.
It's not the same answer as we were. No.
It's a difference of Shema or Shema or body or body. The thing is body or body, but how does the suffix to base didn't come about? Anyway, so then you could say that Lloyd, then you could say that no, that Sumchus would agree in that case you have to swear. We'll leave it over here, and the Gemara will continue tomorrow. From the fact that they didn't have it before, or that Beis Din themselves only has the suffix because they come into Beis Din arguing, they never would have had the suffix if they hadn't been for their arguing.